Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
Top of the ninth, and the Cubs leading it. And welcome into the Budweiser broadcast booth, John Ciampi and Junior Soprano.
He had a way with words, didn't he?
Yeah, he did.
Junior.
What kind of likeness is that?
If they were great artists, they'd be in a museum.
Fodder for cartoonists now?
Jim Deshays and Boog Ciampi have hit the ground running this season. Just like this Cubs team in many ways, they are putting on an excellent broadcast every day and night on the Marquee Sports Network. And JD is kind enough to join us now on the hotline brought to you by Circa Sports. JD, thank you so much for the time. It's Danny and Speaks. How are you, sir?
I am great. Great to be with you guys. How are you doing today?
We are good, man. Yeah, Danny's right. It's a really good broadcast right now with the Chris Kamka edition. It feels like we're just getting so much stuff every night. Do you feel like you're getting to everything that you guys have prepared? Because it's difficult to do that.
Prepared? You think this preparation? Man, this is flying by the seat of our pants. Just making this stuff up as we go along. I appreciate that. That's very kind of you guys to say. Yeah, I think it's been good. I feel like Boog and I, when we talk after games, we kind of look at each other and go, that's a pretty good broadcast, right? Yeah, and then, you know, we go on our way. Sometimes the games move along so quickly, maybe you don't get to have all the conversations you want to have. But I think for the most part, we're kind of doing a nice job.
This team is endlessly fascinating. What, if anything, has been the biggest surprise, positive or negative, for you to start the year?
Oh, boy, biggest surprise. Well, the fact that Nico's not hitting, right, because he's such an accomplished hitter, and I know he will eventually, but you know, and I hate to go to negative town, as Boog would like to say, but that would be a surprise. Michael Bush, I guess, you have to say a little bit. We're not sure what we were going to get, and he hits a home run every night, so that has to be a surprise on the positive front. I think the bullpen still has some issues to straighten out. And likewise with the rotation, but injuries have played such an important, you know, part in that. But I think it's a good club. That's the other conversation Boog and I had, you know, after the first couple of games, that this is going to be a good team to watch. This is going to be a fun season.
Yeah, it's interesting that you bring up Nico. Asked Council about it on Friday. He says he sees the same guy. And I wasn't sure that I'm seeing that. Like, what, do you see the same guy just having some bad luck, or do you see him thrown off a little bit in his offensive game?
Well, I think you know, and Taylor talked about it yesterday, pregame hit she did. Quality of contact is improving, and its hard hit rate is kind of where it was last year. Batting average and balls in play is really low, so there is some bad luck there. The only thing that I saw early, and I'm not seeing as much now, he was getting beat by fastballs in the strike zone. He was swinging and missing at fastballs in the strike zone. Not a ton, but when Nico's right, that just doesn't happen. He doesn't swing and miss at fastballs in the strike zone. So I think his timing was off a little bit early. I think the contact has been better here lately. I think he's hit into some tough luck in recent games. So I suspect, you know, put it this way, right? If he were a stock, you'd buy, because the track record says one thing. The contact quality says something that he's coming. So there should be a little spike in the performance, I would guess, here pretty soon.
And then let's follow up on the other side with Michael Bush. It's Boy, that's a lot of power. It's a lot of raw power. And the way that they got him last year when he was up with the Dodgers was fastballs. That's not how they're getting him now. Seems to be good at adjusting and pitch recognition, this kid, at this point.
Yeah. And I think probably a lot of it is, too, just an opportunity to be in there every day and know that he's going to be in there every day. So you've got the constant flow of at-bats, getting into the rhythm of the season, seeing, major league pitching every day as opposed to sporadically, and knowing that you've got a spot in the lineup so you're not pressing to try to force your way into more playing time, which with Freddie Freeman over there or however else they were going to, use him, there just was, so many good players ahead of him, there just wasn't going to be that opportunity. But that's the interesting thing, right? There's no major league track record that you can really look at with Bush and go, okay, here's what we expect. You can look at his minor league numbers and say, as Jed did, hey, he accomplished everything down there. We're going to, give him runway to be our everyday first baseman and see how it plays out. So that's kind of fun, right? It's interesting for me to see a kid, because those minor league numbers don't always translate, and especially guys coming out of the PCL. Sometimes they put up huge numbers and they don't perform in the big leagues. He looks like he's going to settle in and be just fine, maybe for a good long while.
Morel had a few nice defensive plays over the weekend in Seattle. Do you see day-to-day or week-to-week improvement, or is it all just still raw material out there?
I'm hesitant to make any kind of a leap. Oh, he's figured it out. I just think that the play recently has been better. I thought he was really good in Seattle. But that's a story that we'll continue to follow. That's the other thing, and maybe not a surprise, but just in terms of the narrative around this team, Christopher Morel at third base is, for me, the most interesting story. Like how does he handle it? How good does he need to be to justify being in the lineup on a near daily basis over there? And the answer for me is adequate. He doesn't have to be great as long as he continues to produce. And he's cooled off a little bit with the bat. And I'm not an infield guy. I can't watch him play and go, oh, he's improved. His footwork, and I know when it looks bad, I can tell the difference between good and bad sometimes, but sometimes to see a player and go, okay, that's been fixed. He's now a polished major league infielder. I think that's a little bit beyond me. That's more of a conversation I would ask coaches about at council and get their take. And I think, in all honesty, and I'll ask Craig about this today or maybe in the upcoming days, just to get his assessment, I think he would say work in progress.
So I think that's all fair, and you guys have obviously talked about it a ton during the broadcasts, and I think we all understand that it's a work in progress and that there are multiple ways to help a pitcher, right? It could be with a great defensive play at the hot corner, and it could also be putting a three-run homer over the wall. But I am curious, does it impact a pitcher's mindset of – this is not normal at the big league level to let a guy at a tough defensive position just learn on the fly. I would imagine the instinct of a pitcher would be put the best defensive guys out there, or is that not something you could think about when the ball's in your hand?
Yeah, I think it's if he's helping you win games. So even net, if he's helping you win games, if the old cliche, does he drive in more than he lets in? I mean, that's kind of the conversation that I think a lot of us have had about Christopher at third base. I think if I were a pitcher on a team and there was a guy at a position player that was just butchering it on the nightly, there would be conversations, with fellow pitchers over a cocktail, like, this guy's killing us. You probably wouldn't say anything to the manager about it. You might grouse about it, but you just go out and do your job. And I think that's kind of what you have to do as a professional, but Morel's far from that. I mean, he's had some misplays and some struggles over there, and it's going to be raw at times. But he's far from just, an absolute butcher. And the other thing that Craig has done a nice job too, certain matchups, if he thinks the ball is going to be hit on the ground a lot in that direction with a certain pitcher on the mound, he's played other people over there. But it feels like he's starting to lean into Morel more and more frequently.
I'm trying to figure out what happens when Patrick Wisdom comes back. I mean, that's a lot of pop. And a decent defensive third baseman. Is Madrigal in trouble? Is Garrett Cooper in trouble? I mean, Garrett Cooper's got more of a track record than Wisdom as a big league hitter. I overall, what do you think the move is, Jim?
Yeah, I don't know. I think Patrick has options, so that matters. I'm assuming Cooper does not. Mm-hmm. I don't know about Madrigal. And Canario, supposedly, from what I'm reading, is coming up today,
yep.
what I'm hearing. And I don't know. I haven't seen a corresponding move on that. Have you?
No. The rumors are that Saya might have pulled a hammy a little bit or tweaked a hammy a little bit.
Okay. So. I wasn't even aware of that. I've been in my little bubble here. So I don't know. That's not good news if that's the case. I don't know. I don't know what the answer will be because you got to try to figure out who's your best fit on your bench. If you're Council, do you want defense? Do you want slug? Do you want positional versatility? Do you want speed? I mean, all those things are probably in the conversation. I don't think there's any guarantee that when Patrick's ready to go, that he's on the big league club.
What do you feel like you've learned about Craig in terms of how he handles a bullpen, Jim, as you've watched now?
Oh, I love his honesty when he said, don't hire me for my bullpen. You know, his point is like, I had some really good bullpens over there in Milwaukee that kind of manage themselves to a certain extent. I do love what he says about it. I love from day one, he said, I'm going to be willing to let this thing evolve and make some decisions as I go along about who gets used in what situations. I think a lot of managers, in the modern game now are starting to embrace the idea that, I need this pitcher against a certain pocket of hitters in the eighth inning, so I'm not going to save him until the ninth inning. I love that. I think this idea that so-and-so's got to have the seventh and somebody else the eighth and somebody the ninth is, in my view, not a good idea. He's very thoughtful. That's the one thing I've noticed from day one. When you ask him a question, there's almost always a hesitation, and you can see him thinking. And there's always a thoughtful answer. It's not just off the cuff I'm going to answer this question so people will stop asking me questions. It's thought out and it's smart. He's a really smart guy. And he's got a good way about him, good sense of humor too.
Jim DeShays is with us from the Marquee Sports Network. Cubs are in Arizona tonight. What are you seeing from Neris?
He needs to throw more strikes. We dodged one yesterday, Almonte, and then Neris was, we had four walks and a hit batter in the span of about eight batters in those two innings and still managed to win that game. The velo is not what it was three or four years ago when he was at the Phillies and he was mid 90s. The splitter is, still going to be his go-to pitch. I think he just needs to throw a few more strikes with his fastball. And that'll get guys probably more inclined to chase his splitter a little bit. But right now he's just spraying it around too much.
I wonder, Jim, if you just keep throwing him out there and hoping that he gives you a shutdown inning and kind of snaps out of it a little bit. Or do you do some of that churn of the roles like you were talking about? Because he has been aggressive with that, and maybe he should still be doing some aggression with that.
I still think he's going to use them in leverage situations. I don't think he's automatically the eighth inning guy. I think Leiter has probably proven to be the most dependable guy out there right now. So I think it depends on who's coming up to hit, right? He's going to want Leiter against left-handers. Neris to a degree as well because of a split-finger pitch. But I don't see at this stage of the season, what are we, 16 games in, I don't see him pulling the plug in terms of Neris not being a leverage guy. And I'm sure, Neris has been around a long time, so I'm sure there's conversations like, what do you need to be at your best? And maybe Neris will say, I need a little more work. He had a few days off before, his last outing. So sometimes the schedule plays into it too, right, just in terms of how often a guy gets used before he can settle into a groove.
Yeah, you were talking about Craig being smart and having an answer for everything and don't hire me for my bullpen, because there's – a great bullpen can make a bad manager great, right? I mean, Ned Yost had automatic guys, won a ton of games, but no one ever really was like, oh, he's a great bullpen guy. It was just like every lever that he pulled worked. So in general, not with Neris, I agree. He'll keep going to him. They paid a lot for him. But is that a feel thing or is that a 40-game mark thing, a 60-game mark thing? When do you think they start to change the overall makeup of – the trust and the options that he goes to?
Yeah, I think it. You know, I think like any decision you make with your roster, as long as you're winning enough games, you're more patient. If you get into a stretch where you're not winning enough games, you become less patient. And all of a sudden, there's a sense of urgency that says, you know, all right, we need to shake things up here, change roles, change personnel, you know, whether it's, you know, calling somebody up from the minor leagues, giving them a shot. Tyone's coming back. Justin, hopefully not too far down the road, comes back. And at that point, does Ben Brown become a bullpen piece for you? And can he, you know, ultimately be a leverage guy? So I think there will be options going forward. But I think a lot of it just depends on how well the club is playing. A winning club always buys underperforming players more time. But I do get the sense that Craig is going to be one of those guys that, you know, will push to make changes if you know, sooner maybe than other guys would. I haven't had that conversation with him, but that's just the sense I have.
Yeah, that makes sense. Jim Deshays with us here on Parkinson Spiegel. 12 years in the big leagues for Jim Deshays, won double-digit games 6 times, had a lot of teammates. You paid a lovely compliment to Yan Gomes the other night when you said, you know, that's a guy I wish was my teammate. That's a cool thing. Why do you wish that Yan Gomes was your teammate, Jim? What made you say that?
Yeah, we were just talking about him, and he just one, what you witness, the way he plays the game, the way he interacts with pitchers, and then when you see him in the clubhouse, the way he is, he just has, you know, a good way about him. He's a fun guy, but he's, you know, obviously does a lot of prep and he's smart. He's been around a long, long time, so there's a sense of perspective there, a veteran that's he just seems like a cool guy to hang out with and spend some time with and obviously talk baseball and play alongside. And a lot of that, too, is just what you hear secondhand when other people talk about him, other coaches and players and, you know, watching him on the team playing, what, you know, whatever it is, you kind of go, this guy'd be a fun guy to be a teammate with.
You got other Cubs that you've watched here in your run that would make up the all Deshays teammate team?
Well, if I start listing, I'm going to leave somebody off, right? And you know, what about Riz? How come you didn't put Riz on these? So, for sure, Kyle Hendricks, right? Kyle Hendricks is like he's the team captain, and David Ross, I think, would be another one. My feeling throughout my entire life in baseball has been there's very few guys that I've been associated with either as a teammate or as a broadcaster that, man, I wouldn't want to go to lunch with that guy. They're mostly good people. You know, you come across some idiots, you come across some knuckleheads, but they're mostly good people. But some do stand out, and I get that sense about Gomes and Hendricks, and I feel like Rossi's that way. John Lester, I think, would have been a fun one. John could just kind of, he had a little edge to him that I appreciated. I think would have been fun to be a teammate of his.
Who's your favorite teammate that you did have?
Oh man. Larry Anderson jumps out at me. Mike Scott.
Larry Anderson is in your role in Philly with Scott Fransky. And they have a beautiful, fun relationship. Larry Anderson is beloved as a broadcaster, so not surprised to hear that name come up early.
Yeah, L.A. is a beauty. I was a teammate of his for about 5 years in Houston. As a matter of fact, in 1994, it was post lockout. I don't remember, at the end of my career, I guess it was before the 95 season. And I was terrible in 94, so I was scrambling for a job. There was a lockout going on, so I had to sign a minor league deal. And it's either going to be with Toronto or Philly. And I told my agent, Philly, strictly because Larry Anderson was still trying to hang on in his career as well in Philadelphia. So I didn't even look at, you know, what my chances of being on the club were or what the, you know, what the general manager thought of me or anything like that. I said, well, Andy's still down there with the Phillies, so I picked Philly. Let's go there. and let's go end our career in Scranton, Pennsylvania. But he was a knucklehead. He was a funny guy. He was a prankster.
I don't know if you were that bad. You weren't that bad in 94. Jimmy had just led the league and earned runs allowed and home runs allowed.
Yeah. I tell you what, the only thing that helped me sleep, and this is 30 years later, I still, you know, have nightmares about that. I go, well, It must be I was tipping my pitches and the whole league was on steroids. That's the only thing that helps me sleep at night. Whether any of that is true or not, I don't know. But that's how I rationalize my 1994 season.
Good for you.
Let it go, JD. Forgive yourself.
Okay, man. This is horrible.
Well, at least you started. At least you started 25 times. You know,
that's right. I took the ball. Yeah. Give me the ball, Skip. I'll go out there for you.
Who hit it the furthest against you in '94?
Who hit it the furthest?
Yeah. When you wake up in a nightmare and you're like, it's like the crack of a bat. Who is it off of? Who crushed you?
I tell you a couple of things. I remember the Rangers. You know, they had Pudge and Juan Gonzalez, and I remember
they were all on steroids. That entire team was.
I remember Pudge Rodriguez hit an opposite field home run against me on a changeup in the Metrodome. I was like, how did that go out? That's kind of weird. And then the other thought that I had was I'm warming up in Baltimore, and it's about 100 degrees. And I'm in the bullpen before the game at Camden. And it was so hot, I had to take a break in between warm-up pitches. And I sat on the bench here in the bullpen, and my thought immediately went to the St. Lawrence River up in northern New York where I'm from. I go, God, I'd much rather be on the river than about to go out there and face this team on this hot night because this is not going to end well. So there was all kinds of, you know, any mental skills coach would tell you, man, your head's not in a good place. But, you know, you do what you do.
JD, good stuff. Keep up the good work. Enjoy Arizona, and we'll see you back at Wrigley on the next homestand. Thank you, sir.
All right. Great to be with you guys. Take care.
Thanks, Jim.
Thank you. Yeah. That's Jim DeShays. Very comfortable, informative. I would say dry humor.
Yeah.
Is a staple of the marquee broadcast.
I think so. Yeah, it was a negative town. Boog dropped a destination tater town last week at one point. I was like, yeah, go for it. I like Destination Tater Town.
Tater Town.
Yeah, it's delicious.
That is delicious. I don't know if they have taters at Rinaldi's, but I'll be there tomorrow after the show in Lincoln Park doing a book signing. You could purchase books, Pipeline to the Pros. Portion goes to Brain Cancer Research, Brain Up, great Chicago-based brain cancer research charity that I'm on the board of. Book is out tomorrow. Pre-order it now on Amazon, and then come see us at Rinaldi's in Lincoln Park. I'll be hanging out till like 8, 8:30, something like that, right after the show. Me and my co-author, Ben Kaplan. So you could buy a book and get it signed, and then we're going to just be hanging out for a couple hours.
Oh, that's awesome. The Ben's over there. Is Ben coming over here? Is he kind of going to come over and hang out at the radio station for a little bit?
I don't think so. I think he's going to just meet me at Rinaldi's in Lincoln Park. But, I mean, he could.
Yeah, well.
He could. It's not a terrible idea.
Right? I mean, let's talk about it. You guys are hustling, man. The volume of endorsements, the volume of podcasts you're doing – the volume of infiltration into the NBA media sphere that this book is getting has been impressive, frankly, over the last few weeks.
Thanks, man. Yeah, that's you know, in our division of labor, that is my domain.
Mm-hmm.
So I have been working on it very hard. I have a sheet right here I'm holding up of probably, I don't know, 100 names on it that I'm like, did I go on your pod? Did you send out that promotional tweet that you promised?
Wow.
So yeah, I'm a lot of text messages, a lot of emails, a lot of following up, a lot of cashing in of favors and stuff like that. And tomorrow there's another big one coming for me, going on Levitard for the first time ever.
Oh, you love that show. Love that dude, and you love that show with good reason.
I'm very, very excited about it. So, yeah, at 11 o'clock local time tomorrow, I'll be on Levitard promoting the book. Going on with our friend Pat Tomasulo tomorrow morning at 7:15. So my day starts early. I'll be in studio with WGN at 7:15. I think I'm going on Mully and Haw at 9,
wow.
Levitard at 11, going on Kevin Clark's show tomorrow.
Damn.
So full day of book promotion for your boy tomorrow, given that the book comes out tomorrow.
Good
so
stuff.
Big day tomorrow.
Good, 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 good stuff.
So I will be drinking beer at Rinaldi's Lincoln Park at around 6:15 or so. So come see us and buy a book and hang out and have a good time at Rinaldi's tomorrow in Lincoln Park. But the Bulls are right back where they were last year, but the narrative is that it's something to celebrate, And I want to examine if the case that they're making is a fair one. Next on the Score.
I mean, I always took care of myself, you know, to the fullest, on the court, off the court. You know, I try to eat the best I can eat. I don't do nothing. I don't go out. I don't drink. I don't do much of nothing. So with that, I try to take care of myself so I can be out there for those guys. And at the end of the day, I just love playing. You know, I don't look at it like it's an age thing. You know, I just want to play. I just love playing basketball.
That's DeMar DeRozan, who continues to exceed expectations, led the league in minutes. Pretty insane, man. That level of professionalism in an era of load management, with his production and his age, to lead the league in minutes on a team that's not going to win anything is very, very commendable.
He is the first guy at his age to lead the league in minutes since Kobe Bryant at that age.
His basketball hero.
His basketball hero. It's true. And it was pretty crazy in a game that meant nothing in terms of seeding and where the Bulls were going to be. Vooch played 42 minutes, Caruso played 41, Kobe White played 43, and DeMar played 44 yesterday against the Knicks, with the Knicks desperately trying to improve their seeding.
Yeah, that's a respect to the game type of thing. Just the league would not want the Knicks to have the Bulls lie down for them, yeah. So do that. That's a respect to the game type of thing.
And also, it's the fourth matchup of the year, obviously, but what, third in the last 8 days or 10 days or something? Just because the way the schedule worked out, this really funky finish. So there's some competitive juices there for Billy as well, I'm sure, as the players. Jalen Brunson is just such a badass. So much respect for that dude's career. I mean, I don't know. Giannis is the most important and best player in the Eastern playoffs, and Jason Tatum is obviously up there, but is Jalen Brunson third?
Well, yeah, I mean, and Giannis has the injury question.
Yes, he does, and Lillard was bad in some big games down the stretch. Milwaukee's kind of a mess right now.
Yeah, they're the second favorite in the East, and I still think, like, when healthy, if playing their best basketball, they'd be the biggest threat to Boston, which is such a complete team. I mean, their fifth guy in their starting lineup got All-Star votes this year. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Boston has been blitzing the league, but Jalen Brunson's a perfect Tibbs player, like Jimmy Butler, perfect Tibbs player, Taj Gibson, perfect Tibbs player, Joakim Noah, perfect Tibbs player. Jalen Brunson's a perfect Tibbs player.
It's true, and getting absolutely everything that there is to get out of his talent because of work ethic. But here we are, man. Bulls Hawks on Wednesday. Can you feel it? Can you feel that excitement for it?
No is the short answer. No.
Shane, a hoops junkie, are you worried that you're gonna relapse on Bulls Hawks on Wednesday night?
Yeah, I've never been less worried about relapsing than I am right now.
I mean I'll watch.
Thanks.
But excited is a bit of a stretch. But listen to how Billy Donovan framed the finish to the season, the 9 seed, and where they are, even though this is exactly where they were last year.
I told the guys I couldn't be any prouder and feel more privileged to be able to work with these guys every day. You know, and the reason I say that is because of, you know, things that they've had to endure this season, you know, as a team. And I think I mentioned to you guys before the game, it could have been a lot worse. You know, I don't know, someone said we were maybe 5 or 6 games over 500. You know, if I would have said to anybody here, Zach Levine's out, Patrick Williams is going to be out, and you're going to miss Torrey Craig, and you're going to go through all these things, and you're going to have to bring back Javonte Green, and, you know, you would sit there and say, this team is incapable of having a winning record, you know? So from that standpoint, the hand that we were dealt, I think that they handled it really well. Organizationally, is this where we want to be going forward? No, we want to be in a situation where you're making, you know, deep playoffs run. We're not that right now. But I give our guys a lot of credit for holding on to the rope and fighting and battling and competing and giving ourselves an opportunity, you know, to advance and maybe, you know, earn an opportunity to get to the playoffs. So they deserve a lot of credit for that. And I think I mentioned there's a lot of money that's not playing for us, you know, and our team is what it is. You know, we're not an upper echelon Eastern team right now. That's just a fact of the matter. We're going to work to try to get to that point, but these guys have really, really worked, and I think they've taken a lot of pride. And, you know, have they always been perfect? Have we always played great? Have there been things we've been disappointed in? Sure, you know, and we're all in it together. But I do appreciate the way they've continued to battle and fight and stay together, lift each other up, and try to support each other.
I thought that was really fair, and because he clearly said it'd be very easy to criticize him. Hey, they're the 9 seed. Don't celebrate that. He's saying this isn't where we want to be organizationally. We need to be we're trying to be top of the Eastern Conference. We've got a lot of money out. It could have been worse. And Cody Westerlund put it interestingly, and I'm just going to add one thing to it. He said, I agree it could have been worse for the Bulls, and they've played hard all season, but it's worth noting that the 34-28 record since the 5-14 start is a 45-win pace for a full season. A 45-win team shouldn't be viewed as an achievement. You're still likely first-round fodder. 45 wins is also the 9 seed. That's what's amazing. They won 39 games. They're the 9 seed. The 8 seed won 46 games. So there's a huge gap between where the Bulls finished and the top of the Eastern Conference. So they've got a ways to go. But in terms of effort and professionalism, more often than not, we got treated to a hard-working product this season. That's a low bar for professional athletes on guaranteed contracts making tens of millions of dollars a year. But it isn't a guarantee in the NBA. The playoffs I'm going to watch every night. I can't wait for it. It's absolutely some of the best entertainment that sports has to offer. But the regular season in the NBA often is not. And the Bulls did try.
Yeah, no, they definitely tried.
For whatever that makes it. And maybe you're listening to this and you're saying that means absolutely nothing to me. Okay, fine. That's your right. But they tried.
Well,
they could have packed it in and they tried.
There's a difference between competitive ceiling based on the talent and the makeup of your roster and then your own ceiling based on your effort and work ethic and the coaching that is going on. And this team, as assembled, played to their ceiling during the course of this season. I thought that was really good, honest stuff from Billy. And I love when he talks like that because he's a made guy. He's a made guy in this league. He's obviously a made guy in this organization. And being honest about what they have and what they're not, while also praising what they've done, is really good for fans to hear. I thought that was really, really good because here's the thing. They did bust their ass. And for the most part, they played really well at the end of games and in close games, like legendarily so. We know where they were in terms of the clutch stats and the clutch wins, 27 clutch wins on the year, even with the loss yesterday, and that was the most in the NBA. And I saw this, Danny, that the Bulls are the best relative to expectations clutch team of the tracking data era. So that's 2013 on. They beat out the 73-win Golden State Warriors as the best relative to expectations clutch team. So it's like they did overachieve in terms of effort level and playing well in close games. And they do have limitations in terms of talent and assembly. So, yeah, we got to look at that and say, you know, led by a couple of veterans who play hard and lead hard in Vooch and DeMar, and a coach who got a lot out of his guys.
What's amazing is I think it's going to end exactly the same as last year.
Win one play-in game, lose the second one?
And it might be the exact same as win one play-in game, lose to Miami.
Yeah.
But I think Miami or Philly get them, and I think they beat Atlanta.
I wouldn't be surprised if they make it out of it. If they win both, I'll go ahead and say that they're going to make it out, that they're going to win both of these games and get out of the play-in and get the Celtics in round one.
Oof, I'd be surprised. But quick sweep coming in that scenario. But they do try, and they've got that going for them, which is nice. Spiegs is a great talent because he shares his embarrassment with us in the world. He does so next on The Score.
The Parkins and Spiegel Show.
Doing it and doing it and doing it.
Afternoons on The Score.
All right, Speaks, what'd you do?
So, look, man, it was the anniversary weekend, and we did a staycation, okay? So
staycation, lovely, love it.
Lovely, yeah. Lovely. And, you know, it fits me because I've lived all around this town through the years, all over the place in different neighborhoods, now live downtown, and I love downtown. I hang out at some very, very, very touristy spots every once in a while, but what the hell? It's a good city, all right? So screw you guys. I lead with that. But the
defensive.
I know, immediately. Because he got my head, Shane. But here's the thing. It was a great time. We stayed at the Wit right over there on State Street.
Yeah, sure.
Went to have dinner at Royster in the West Loop, which was a lovely dinner. Sitting at a bar table around the kitchen, essentially, watching the chefs work. Very highly recommend. So you can, if you're into like watching people call each other chef and do things along the way. Saw Ronnie Chang at the Chicago Theater, which was very, very funny. You would have loved it, Danny. He worked like an hour and 45 minutes, just kept going. And then at the end, he's like, thank you for being so patient. I'm working on stuff for my special. So he was workshopping hard. It's the longest I've ever seen a comic work. It was
amazing. Respect. Like
yeah,
that.
It was amazing. Then the next morning, went for brunch at Miru, which is on top of the St. Regis over there on Wacker. So Japanese brunch and absolutely delicious.
Is that the sushi place there?
It is.
Yeah, I didn't know they had a brunch.
Yeah, they do. Okay. They do have a brunch. It was absolutely delicious. Great spot on a beautiful day, of course, in Chicago. And so we're eating. We have like, you know, I have the crispy rice and the spicy tuna. Absolutely great. There was like a little egg bao, like an egg breakfast sandwich and a bao bun, which was freaking awesome. And then they gave us pancakes. Okay. And it's blueberry kind of cheesecake pancakes. We got like a stack of three pancakes. And all we have at this point, of course, is chopsticks. So we're like, how do you eat pancakes with chopsticks?
You ask for a fork.
No, didn't do that. Didn't do that, Danny. Didn't think that was an option.
Didn't think it was an option.
Didn't think it was an option.
It's a restaurant.
I know, but it's a Japanese restaurant, and they didn't put forks on the table. And then the service has been outstanding. So we have the chopsticks. We're like, all right, well, how do you do this? I don't know. Let's figure it out. So it took about, I don't know, 12 minutes or so for us to fully eat the pancakes. I'm like trying to lean in with the chopsticks and cut a pancake in half. Christine's like, I think we're supposed to roll it up. That's what I think we're supposed
roll
to.
Roll it up?
So she takes one pancake with a chopstick off and puts it on her plate, puts the blueberries in the middle, uses the chopsticks to try and roll it up into a tube, and then picks up the tubular pancake and starts taking bites out of it. We're laughing. We're like, I guess this is what we're supposed to do. We'd figure this out. A couple at the table next to us is laughing. He's like, you guys are doing great. You guys are figuring it out, right? We think it's hilarious. Waiter comes up and he's like, so how were the pancakes? Like, oh, those were great, but we weren't sure how to use the chopsticks. And he said, they didn't bring you a fork? We're like, oh, didn't know that was. He's like,
you ate three pancakes with chopsticks?
We split an order of three pancakes with blueberries and ricotta or whatever the hell it was. With chopsticks. But he's like, yeah, sorry about that. We're supposed to bring you a fork. Like, yeah. Yeah, you were. But we didn't ask. I thought we were supposed to just use our chopstick skills at the highest level. And apparently we could have asked for a fork. I had no idea.
This is I guess good job.
No, I don't think so.
On the problem solving and the ingenuity, but you're at the St. Regis. You're at one of the nicest hotels in the city. Service is top notch. Bad job by them not bringing you a fork. And unless you inhaled the three pancakes in like three bites, how long was the between appearances by a waiter? So the table next to you recognized you struggling, but no one on the wait staff, not a busboy,
no,
not a manager, no one else noticed this couple eating pancakes with chopsticks.
Maybe they thought it was just our choice. If they just see us doing it.
Were there syrup involved?
There was, but we forgot to apply the syrup. We were so...
Well, it would fall off the chopstick.
Right, we would have
You're not putting the syrup on the chopstick, Danny. You're putting it on the pancake. So you'd hope that the pancake absorbs the syrup.
Yeah. But it would get soggier, and it would likely be even more difficult to handle with the chopstick.
Real quick, before we keep laughing at Speaks, 10-day DL for Seiya Suzuki, oblique strain.
Oh, wow. Okay, so 10-day injury.
Just want to get that out there.
For Seiya Suzuki, oblique strain. That sucks, man.
And already Canario up to take his place.
Yeah.
Obliques linger.
Oh, they sure do. And he's a big, strong man.
Didn't Speaks help me?
Yeah.
Oblique for him last year. Oh. Wasn't that the early season injury for Seiya?
It absolutely was. It was. And then it was a long time because, oh, God, it absolutely was the early season
injury. I
don't
have Twitter or the text lineup. I'm sorry. But, I'm like 90-something percent sure that injury early season last year was oblique.
Yeah, no, I think you're right because I remember we talked about how difficult it was, and then you don't know exactly when you're supposed to try and come back because if you try and come back too soon, you can re-aggravate it and it can linger. No, it absolutely was.
Yes, it was a left oblique last year, right this time.
Mm. Oh, man.
That's bad. I mean, hopefully it's just...
This team is getting unlucky, man.
Yeah. Yeah, they are.
They're getting very, very unlucky.
I wonder what Council will now do to the lineup. Canario can hit, but you're not like you're just going to slide him right in there into your top three or anything like that. So probably end up moving Morel up. I mean
Hap, Bellinger, Morel, right?
Hap, Bellinger, Morel, and then Bush 4, probably, which makes some sense. Or Dansby. Dansby in there as well, into that mix. Yeah, that's a tough injury right there.
Got to imagine it's not just 10 days.
Yeah, I don't know.
They just start with that and then figure out what to do from there. And just, that's tough. I wanted to laugh about pancakes and chopsticks.
Yeah, well, feel free. I'm actually curious how you guys would go about eating pancakes with chopsticks.
I wouldn't. I don't even always eat.
I felt like I was in Japan at that point. Well, we'll talk about it. We got to take a break. Let's stay on schedule here, God's sakes.
Okay. Well, yeah. The whole vibe is off. It's Parkinson Spiegel on the Score.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode and catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.